From Taiwan to Cook Islands.
From the United Kingdom to the United States of America.
From Switzerland to Canada.
From Morocco to South Africa.
There is a Nigerian with something for the ears of the world.
Listen to Nigerians in Diaspora on Diaspora Discourse on Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Diaspora Discourse, bringing Nigerians in Diaspora closer home.
All right, it's still Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and I hope that you've been enjoying the Weekend Nigeria transmission. Today, Saturday, of course, 19th September, in the year of our Lord, as promised, as advertised, we're here again with Diaspora Discourse on Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in Diaspora up to speed, the authentic source of Nigerian information, Spirit of Nigeria Radio, positive Nigerian energy. And today, we have, as promised, as advertised, Dr. Wale Okediran, who is our guest today on Diaspora Discuss. Dr. Wale Okediran is a medical doctor by training, but a writer by calling, sportsman, having attended the Ife University Medical School in Nigeria. And, of course, he played hockey, which he likes to, you know, pride himself with for the university and Oyo State. Member of the House of Representatives in Abuja from 2004 to 2007, as well as the national president of the Association of Nigerian Authors from 2005 to 2009. Apart from medical degrees, Dr. Okediran also has a diploma in writing from the London School of Writing, and I think he acquired that in 1982. Dr. Okediran has published till date 15 novels, 11 adult novels, and 4 children's books. In addition, he has published 5 biographies of some notable Nigerians, apart from being on the reading list of some Nigerian and foreign universities, and some of his books, which have won local and international literary prizes and recognitions, include The Boys at the Border, The Rescue of Uncle Babs, Dreams Die at Twilight, Strange Encounters, The Weaving Looms, Tenants of the House, of course. It's also being adapted right now into a motion picture directed by Kunle Afolayan. He is married with children, and of course, he's a grandfather. All right, Dr. Okediran, how did you get into politics?
Yes, thank you. I was the private physician to Emeka Chibolaje, who was Nigeria's Attorney General. And of course, we all know that many people aware that Chibolaje loved bringing in young people into his own area of interest. That was how he was able to convince me to join politics. And from there, one thing led to the other, and I won the seat in the Nigerian parliament for about 4 years. Yeah, I was able to play my own role in pushing forward the political agenda in Nigeria. And of course, my stay in the parliament was also an asset to me as a writer, because that was the inspiration for my my book, Tenants of the House, which I consider to be a factional account of my stay in the parliament.
Okay, but did you find it interesting? Oh, you got bored, because clearly you are no longer in politics. Yeah. Are you still in politics?
Well, I'm still in politics, but I would say not as active as before. As somebody who came from a very different background, I came from a medical traditional background,
yes,
and also somebody who has never worked in the public domain before. Coming into politics was very, very, very different, and I had my baptism of fire. because the politicians dribbled me. I was well dribbled by politicians, and I almost gave up at the point. But I survived, and I think I've learned a lot. I'm still in politics, but I think I would say I'm just I play politics on the background now, not like before.
Okay, all right. Now let me ask you pointedly. This is African literature that we're talking about. And African literature is literature of or from Africa. And of course, it includes oral literature. Is African literature dying?
No, I will not say African literature is dying. Even though, I would say, African writers are having a lot of challenges.
Wow.
In getting published and getting their work translated across the continent.
Mm.
And then again, the brain drain that took place some years ago has also impacted, I would say, negatively and positively on African literature.
Mm.
Because many African writers had to go abroad. They are now in diaspora. And
yes.
Because of that, I would say that the Africanness in their writing changed a bit. But the positive thing is that these writers who now practice their trade outside their countries are open to better publishing outlets, more better promotions, and better pay. So, in a way, I would say the pay rate has been good, even though some little negativity. But all around, I think African literature is still thriving, it would have been nice or better if our upcoming writers can have more access to publish their books, and if we can also find ways of translating books across African borders.
Mm. Okay, that's a very interesting point, because I was going to take you up on the role of technology, how African writers, should be deploying technology more. And I have a very practical experience. My wife wrote a book, and she uploaded it on Amazon, and it's just selling from there. I mean, it's as easy as that.
Yeah.
She's done two books in COVID, which I, I'm jealous right now, though. She has done two books in COVID. One is Calabar Love Potions. Another one is My Walk Muse, and it's pretty easy. With technology, she designed her cover herself with an app, and she uploaded it. So why aren't African writers taking advantage of technology, to improve or showcase their skills?
Yes, many African writers are also doing that. They are doing exactly what Owadi is doing.
Mm.
Many of their books are online, and they are also doing a lot of conferences and dialogues on the virtually. For example, since I came to office as the Secretary of Power, I've been able to organize two virtual meetings whereby writers from far-flung areas, South Africa, Egypt, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, were able to interact. And then, of course, we also have the Amazon and other online publishers doing business. But you agree with me that some people still believe in the book. When I say the book, we are talking of the real thing,
the hard copy,
which you want to hold, which you want to treasure.
Mm.
And then, not all writers have access to technology. We all know the problems of power supply and having gadgets here and there. So far, so good. We are making progress in that direction.
Okay. Now let's talk about your role as Secretary General of Pan-African Writers Association. What exactly is the Pan-African Writers Association set out to do, and then link it with your role as a Secretary General, something that has moved you from Nigeria to Ghana?
Yes. Well, the Pan-African Writers Association is an umbrella body of all the national writers associations in Africa.
Mm.
And it's been on for about 32 years now.
Really?
And the idea came through from a meeting of the OAU, now AU, African Union, several years ago in Accra, when it was decided that Africa should have a unifying body that will make sure that African literature, which is believed has a big role to play in the economy of the continent, And that the body that will supervise and organize that these letters should be inaugurated. Since that time, power has been in the forefront of trying to support writers across the continent in the areas of translation of books across borders, in the areas of promotion of friendship and dialogue between writers. I came on board about a month ago, and since that time, we are trying to build on the foundation laid by the first Secretary General, that's Professor Atiku Okai, who passed away about 2 years ago. Also to say at this point that I have to acknowledge the support of the government of Ghana, who has taken it upon itself to take care of the headquarters of power in Accra, and taking care of the staff and all that is necessary to make power to continue. We also enjoy a very good rapport with the local writers association, and that's GALB, the Ghana Association of Writers. And with this support, we hope that power can become the real continental voice that is meant to be. And which is why, since I came on board, we've organized some virtual meetings where writers from across the continent were able to dialogue and set what you call a post-COVID agenda for literature. We were able to discuss among ourselves what we should do once this pandemic gets out of the way. And one of the things we are thinking is to use literature to address some developmental issues. Developmental issues, I mean by even the COVID-19 pandemic, gender violence, environmental pollution, and so on. Because we confirmed that some of this heavy stuff, when they are put in literary form, like story for young people, or stories that are easy to understand, these topics can better understood by people. And we also want to be in line with the United Nations sustainable goals, the SDG goals, because I can see that out of the 7 pillars, pillar 5 of the SDG of the United Nations 2030 is on how to make Africa a viable continent in the area of cultural and literary activities. So these are the things we have in mind. And luckily, just like you mentioned, the COVID thing has taught us how to use technology.
Certainly.
So we now do many of our businesses virtually. We're able to link people from all over the place together. And we're also going to start a series of books that we cut across writers on the continent. Our major challenge again will be language. It's funny to say that Africa don't have a common lingua franca.
Yeah.
And so we are contesting with 5 different languages which we know from our colonial masters. We are talking about French, English, Arabic, and the rest. So these are issues we need to also find how to translate books from one part of the continent to the other. A lot of work.
Certainly. Yeah, because I was going to say that I am missing the vibrancy, you know, that I grew up with, you know, in the African literary space. I remember in secondary school, we read African writers, all kinds of, you know, novels and literature materials that, you know, which was one of my best subjects. So, but these days, I don't know, is it still the same? It's no longer the same. Where are the upcoming writers? Where are the new writers? Ayikwe Ama, the beautiful ones are not yet born. You know, we knew what was happening in South Africa through literature, Chinua Achebe, all the writers. But after that, it only seems like we have Chimamanda, yes. Looks like that's the only person that we have right now. Where are the young and upcoming writers? What are you going to do to, you know? Nigerians don't know how to write again, especially with technology. People are abbreviating. They are using wrong tenses sometimes on WhatsApp platform. And I say, look, writing is degenerating. What is power going to do about this?
Yes. Thank you. It's one of the program we have on ground. We want to commence a series of literary workshops whereby the established writers can help us to mentor the upcoming ones. There's no doubt that we have some challenges among some of our young ones in the area of context, the quality of the context in their works need to be addressed. And I'm so happy to say that many of our established writers have volunteered to give of their free of their time, of their skill, free of charge to this endeavor. And the other thing we also believe we need to do, just like you mentioned, resuscitating the African Writers Series. That was a wonderful experiment by Hanneman in those days. We need to find a common ground where these things can be brought together. And in addition, what I tried to do in Nigeria, which is still going on, that's residency. I have one in Nigeria, which I've known for 10 years now, through which we open our doors to writers from all over the continent and allow them to come and spend about 6 weeks to write in a very conducive environment, free of charge. And since we established this writer's residency, we've had about 120 writers from 10 different countries. Because when they come together, these writers share a lot of information between themselves. They learn from each other. And I'm so happy to say that the other residency, actually it's in my hometown, in Nigeria, in Israel. We have had about 10 or more than 10 writers who wrote outstanding works that have won international awards, all written in that residency. So we can say that it's not as if we don't have those writers there. They are there, but they are having so many challenges. Challenge of poverty. Many of them don't even have jobs. Many of them are hacking out living. And then how do they combine that with writing? Many of them, the environment is too distracting. And then, I don't want to annoy football fans by saying that some of our writers now know more about Chelsea and Arsenal than Chimamanda Adichie or somewhere like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
A lot of distraction from other technology. The WhatsApp and all that stuff. But with that kind of Islam, so power wants to find a way of establishing more writer residency across the continent so it can allow our young ones to have conditions environment where they can write. And without any stress. The other thing we are trying to do is to collaborate with some NGOs and continental bodies who can support us. We've been talking to, for example, here in Ghana, in Accra, we've been discussing with the Association of African Union, Association of African Universities, AU, on how both of us can work together and reach all our writers on the continent. And we also want to see what we can do with the African bank in Abidjan to see what we can also do to help writers. Then we are also in the process of translating works that we find that are of good quality across the continent. Find a way of translating books that I've read well, that I've written in French, into English, and vice versa. And that way, we believe we're going to encourage our writers. And then, of course, we have so many book fairs that are on. The Arcade Book Festival is in Nigeria there. We have the South African Book Festival. The Harare Book Festival has also been stopped for some time. We want to encourage some of these festivals to be resuscitated. Those that are already moribund. Those book festivals are also very good avenues for writers to interact, to learn from each other, and to be discovered.
Yeah, to exhibit their works too.
That people are working, yes, people are working, people are writing, and all they need is some encouragement.
All right, okay. Let me take a pause right now. I have Mazino here with me. I'm sure she would like to ask you a question because I didn't introduce her earlier because of the reconnection or the connection issues. So she has a question for you. Go ahead, Zina.
Okay. Nice to have you, sir. You said,
thank you.
Schools today are still using the old literature text with new way back. And while you were talking, you said upcoming writers now infuse a lot of foreign content in their writings, thereby losing the African feel. What do you think could be the reason?
Yes. Well, I think there are two reasons. Number one is the fact that some of them had to emigrate to the Western countries where their Africanness was a bit affected. And then, of course, the other thing again is that many prominent novelists are of the Western extraction. Mm. And it's natural that our young ones want to mimic what they read. In those days, when we mentioned the African writer series,
yes,
it was easy for an African child from anywhere on the continent to read about Ngugi wa Thiong'o,
yes,
or Achebe or Soyinka,
yes. Yes.
And so what you write will be similar to that. But now, Achimila and all the famous American novelists, their books are flooding the country because our young ones don't have enough publishing outlets. And so I think these are one of the reasons why the contents of what they write have been affected. But we are going to find a solution to that through these workshops, which I mentioned. We're going to start a series of virtual literary workshops.
Mm.
People like Chika Inigo, who is in the U.S., as well as many of our Nigerian writers and African writers who are in the diaspora, have promised to give us their free time to assist us in this effect.
Okay, but if you look at the world in which we live in today, everything happening,
yes,
is a global village. Everything happening we see. So our
yes,
lifestyle is even changing. The way we do things, we did things
yes,
way back, and what's happening right now is so different. So don't you think if it's affecting the kind of their writing style, it should be allowed? Because the lifestyle we live today is changed. We don't have to take water from the clay pots anymore. Everything is changed. We use refrigerators. Everything is changing. Yes, so if it's affecting the writing, do you think it's out of place? No, it's not out of place in that respect, because you write 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 in
the issue of the coming of the white man, all this stuff. Mm. But now, just like you said, many of our young ones grew up in the cities. Many of them don't even go to their villages again. So, and the theme of their writing will be reflected by what is around them. But nevertheless, there are still ways of writing about Africa without necessarily being over affected by Western influence. I'm talking of our cuisine. And still eat, whether you like it or not, Africans still have their own basic cuisine. We also have our modes of dressing. We have festivals. We have ceremonies. Many ceremonies are still going on. Whether you have a world that's in front of or not. So some of these things can still be reflected. But I will not blame any child who decides to, or any young family who decides to write on COVID-19 or on environmental pollution or even on the gender issues because we are having all these alarms. For example, I mean, when people start writing about sexualism in Africa, when people are alarmed, they say, oh, what are you talking about? Lesbianism, homosexuality? But the truth of the matter is that all these are already around us, and it has to be reflected. I remember, I think it was Professor Emma Young, the great critic, who complained that many of our young writers, their writings are writings of, we call it writings of the flesh. That is, they do more of sexual, they are getting more sexually, they are writing more about sexually active things in their books and that kind of thing. And the answer was that, well, people write what the environment influenced them to write.
I mean, quite a number of people grew up with Mills and Boone.
Exactly.
Yeah, and they were just romantic novels. You know, we grew up with James Hadley Chase, who was more like, you know. So I don't really have any issues, but what I know from my own perspective is that we need to keep writing about these things to preserve the African culture, to preserve our heritage, which is one of the reasons why my wife wrote the book Calabar Love Potions. You know, basically to talk about, you know, the Akwa Ibom and the Cross River menu, their delicacies, their cuisine, and all of that. And she calls it Calabar Love Potions Revealed. And I just say that I am the victim, because that's what she used to. I'm the worst person to eat the love potion. But I agree. We need to preserve our culture. We need to write more about some of these. Look, there are a lot of young stars right now in Nigeria. They don't know. They don't have an idea of what the village setting is.
That's true.
My kids have never been to. Okay, they've been to Ibadan, but not to the village. I had to take them to my traditional homestead in Ibadan to go and see mud houses to know what it looks like. You know, because it's part of exposure, it's part of education. So I agree with you on that. And you know, so when is the next Nobel laureate coming from Africa or from Nigeria?
That's a good question. In fact, some people are also believing that the Nobel Prize is a Western idea, that Africa should have its own Nobel Prize too.
I agree.
And they don't want us to think of an African. But I believe that the kind of energy that I can see, because just last week we had this virtual dialogue. On where we are trying to set a post-COVID agenda for the future on the African continent. And the kind of energy I perceived from the young and upcoming writers and literary activists shows me that, yes, very, very soon, we're going to have an outstanding work that can take care of and can stand the time of, can stand up to any Nobel Prize. But in addition to that, power is in the process of putting in place a very big literature prize in African literature. And this, we believe, will be our own Nobel Prize. We are already talking to a few people who are already giving us some very good responses on this prize issue. Again, we have been taught, because I did a course in creative writing, writers have been taught not to use prizes as a benchmark for their work. Because we believe that the process of judging some of these prizes are very subjective.
They certainly would be.
The writers should be more concerned about communicating with their works than winning prizes. But well, I've won a couple of prizes, and I know how it is when you win the prize. Apart from the money, it's also
it's a validation.
A morale boost. It can boost your morale, but at the same time, you want to encourage them to work more on their arts, on the context of their work. Not to look at the price, but when the price comes, good, like an icing to the cake.
Okay, sir, what is being done to encourage
young people to read. There's a popular saying that when you want to hide a thing from a black man, put it in a book. And thank God for the e-learning platforms, you know, people read online and all that. And one complaint you hear, I don't have data, I can't download this, I can't do that, I can't do all of that. Mm-hmm. What do you think can be done to encourage people to read? Since the online things seem to be easier, because you can just pick up your phone, Google something, and you start to read, and to encourage people. So what do you think can be done?
I think it sounds like, what is power doing? What is power doing to encourage you know, the reading culture?
Data?
Yes. Thank you. You are setting agenda for me, because I've been on this for just a month.
Yes.
Well, I will take a cue. I'll take a cue from what has been happening in Ghana and Nigeria. Because those two countries, I'm not sure about the other countries. I know, I'm very familiar with the writers of those two countries. They go before the COVID pandemic. We had programs which took them to schools. They call it primary, secondary school literary awareness campaign.
Okay.
We call it literary awareness campaign. We went to schools to read to school children, to help them to set up libraries or reading corners.
Okay.
Because some schools don't have facilities for libraries. We call it reading corners. Thereby, books are delivered to these schools, and they're encouraged to find a way of locating the book among themselves. The writers will make their own personal books. Books written by the writers are delivered. And these books now form the nucleus of many of these reading corners and their libraries. And then the other thing, which has been done in Nigeria again, I think the Lagos State that did this, because that time I went to see the Commissioner for Education. And she told me that just to mitigate this problem of not having data or not data, or communities, rural areas where they don't have regular power supply, and I said they cannot do e-learning. What he did was to distribute transistor radios, very cheap transistor radios, and distribute to these children in rural areas. And then some radio programs were now put in place.
Yeah,
so that these children can listen to the radio. So these are some of the things which power can borrow. And luckily, like I said, we are already talking to a number of organizations that have the manpower and the resources to make us reach all the nooks and corners of the African continent, particularly the rural areas, so that we can go there, take physical books, and also where we cannot go with the books, we can reach them through e-learning or through radios. We have very people now manufacture very cheap radio sets now that can be distributed to children in one area, and then we talk to them through our radio programs. So there's a lot of work to be done.
Okay, we agree. Certainly, let's give you our pledge here at Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Whatever we can do to support, you know, the power agenda, especially Dr. Okedirun's agenda, because our radio station is listened to by Nigerians in the diaspora. So we are talking to everybody all over the world. We certainly will be starting, as we count down to Nigeria's independence, the 60th anniversary of Nigeria's independence, we'll be counting down, and then we're going to be doing Nigeria book review, books that have been written by Nigerians about Nigeria, which is our first step. And I think from this discussion, we could also do like a read to lead, take a book, you know, a week and begin to, you know, review it, you know, African writers, you know, on Spirit of Nigeria Radio, which would be our contribution. It could also be from the power platform. We can work together and, of course, string a program together, and it becomes like a weekly or monthly, whatever we can do. I'm sure we can discuss that behind the scenes. All right. So now as we come down, we'll do that as we go to the home drive now. Let's talk about Ghana. Now you like 3-4 weeks in Ghana?
Sorry, Sorry, I didn't get that.
You are now in Ghana. So what? Yeah, about 3 or 4 weeks I'm now. You've relocated to Ghana. That's your new base. Major differences between Ghana and living in Ghana and living in Nigeria. Now a diaspora.
don't ask me about jollof rice.
I know about jollof rice. Ghana, I know Ghana doesn't have jollof rice. Nigeria is the jollof rice place.
I think, you know, Ghana is smaller than Nigeria.
Yes, it is.
So, you have this sense of being in a quiet part of Nigeria when you come to Ghana.
Mm.
Because, you know, we are a very large country.
Yes,
we are. A lot of ups and downs. But what I've discovered so far is that because of the steady power supply here in Ghana, I'm able to do more work than before.
Wow.
Although maybe it doesn't make me to sleep because it's like I get hooked to my laptop once the power is there.
Yeah.
Which is good. Yeah, but there are a lot of similarities between the two countries.
Mm-hmm.
So many, I'm discovering so many Ghanaians and Nigerians who have cultural relationships, even marriage relationships.
Yes.
And business relationships. The relationship between the two countries goes back to more than, I can say, even 100 years. When you look at all those traders, you have a Makala market. Makala.
They call it Makula.
We have Makala market.
Yeah, we have Makula. They have Makula.
We also have, yes, yeah, Gambi. And of course, the culture is similar. I mean, the only thing I see here is that funeral ceremonies and funerals are usually celebrated in a big way. I've not been able to sleep for the last 2 days in my neighborhood because of one funeral ceremony. Music all the night, even though the music is nice. So once in a while, I try to do one or two gigs myself. But I need to sleep.
Okay, I know.
So far, so good.
All right, but
then, of course.
I know you are a gentleman, but the Ghanaians find us very aggressive. We talk too loud. We are too chatty. We are too vibrant. They think we are very aggressive. Sometimes also bordering on arrogance. Have you encountered that? They are more gentle, calmer people.
Well, I mentioned it earlier on that because we have a larger population.
Mm.
And the tendency is that when you come from that kind of background, you are more competitive.
Yes.
Somebody who has a smaller population, and you don't think that it's going to be a big deal if I just go to sleep or I just try to take the day off. Whereas when you are in a highly competitive environment, you cannot do that. Before you wake up, somebody else has taken your job.
Mm.
That kind of thing. So, I think the only thing that I had was when I wanted to create the door of the Uber car that I took, and I think I must have slammed the car to the door too hard. And then I shouted, "Hey, too hard,
Massa. yeah, that's Nigeria.
But, we have which I call it a lot of mercantile ability.
Spirit of enterprise. That's the Nigerian spirit.
And that has reflected in the issue of the traders that is on ground here.
Certainly.
But I think that one is being settled, being handled by the diplomatic sector. But like when I was talking to one of my Ghanaian friends, he said, "Look, we are only the Makati million population, and all these Nigerian traders are coming over here. We are over 200 million. If 10% of them come here, and they take over our shops. That's why they are trying to." So these are things that are just. But I think by and large, we have similar things. The food is fine. The banku is a bit heavy. That's why I'm coming because
banku and palava sauce. Do you eat red? You take red. You know red.
Red. Yeah, those are there. But I have to be easy on those because I have to work my weight. I think I've been putting on too much weight since I came here.
You will.
Granite soup and everything.
Yeah, granite soup. You will.
I need to take it easy.
All right, thank you very much, Dr. Wale Okediro, Secretary General, Power, and of course, Power is a professional. Well, is the body that is taking care of writers. Yes, in Africa.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Now, don't worry. We'll be with you in Accra shortly, because Spirit of Nigeria Radio, as part of the 60th anniversary or independence anniversary of Nigeria, we'll be going around African countries talking to Nigerians in diaspora, you know, highlighting some of the activities that they're doing or they're engaging in those places. Also to celebrate Nigerians in diaspora. And like you said, that spirit of enterprise that is running in every Nigerian blood. We are not laid back people. Yeah. And of course, to show that Nigeria is not all about negatives. We want to be given the positive narratives about our country. And so we'll be going around from Africa. We're starting from the African countries and of course later to Europe and to the United States, where we'll be broadcasting live, you know, talking about what Nigerians are doing that, you know, in those places. We also have two major campaigns. One of them is Nigerian Diaspora Votes Matter, which is basically to see how we can work with government to ensure that Nigerians in the diaspora, they vote, they are part of the electoral process. And we also have 60 Nigeria at 60 diaspora icons. And nominations have been coming in from everywhere. Nigerians that are doing well, celebrating Nigerians in diaspora, which will be recognizing, you know, them. So do you have anybody, for example, in Ghana, a Nigerian, who is doing very well, flying high the Nigerian flag, shining bright the Nigerian light?
Well, there are many of them here. I think the most popular ones Billy Mohodi of the Ovation.
Okay.
The Ovation magazine.
Okay.
I think he's been there for a couple of years.
Mm.
And then, of course, we have some of them in the academia.
Yeah.
Who have been here contributing their own quota in the background. Want to talk of the business men who are also in the ground. And then, of course, one or two people in the religious sector too. We have pastors and
not just Nigerians.
So everything is there.
I think the churches churches also come with the spirit of enterprise.
So we are in all the fields of human endeavor.
Okay.
And once we are ready to come, I'll be ready to take you
out. Yeah, I love Ghana. I go to Ghana for my own retreat, my personal retreat. I love his calm. You know, I know a little bit about there. I do my walk in the mornings, and okay, no problem. Don't let me go into that. We'll be going from country to country across Africa to celebrate Nigerians in the diaspora. So thank you very much, Dr. Wale Okediro, for being our guest on Diaspora Discuss today. Dr. Wale Okediro is the Secretary General, Pan-African Writers Association. He's just moved from Nigeria now to Accra, Ghana, because that's where the base is. Thank you very much for being a part of Diaspora.
I appreciate for giving this wonderful opportunity. I hope to continue to work with you in pushing forward the Power Agenda across Africa.
Yeah, thank you very much. One last word from you, Mazino.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's good to have you with us.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thanks all right, thank you very much. Spirit of Nigeria Radio continues with Weekend Nigeria broadcast. This is Weekend Nigeria School 2.
From Taiwan to Cook Islands.
From the United Kingdom to the United States of America.
From Switzerland to Canada.
From Morocco to South Africa.
There is a Nigerian with something for the ears of the world.
Listen to Nigerians in Diaspora on Diaspora Discourse on Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Diaspora Discourse, bringing Nigerians in diaspora closer home.